Good morning. I'd like to share these opening words from Adrian Rich's book, I Dream of a Common Language, A Dream of a Common Language. It comes from a poem called Origins and History of Consciousness. I have dreamed of going to bed as walking into a clear wood ringed by snowy wood. White as cold sheets, thinking I'll freeze in there, my bare feet already numb by the snow, but the water is mild. I sink and float like a warm amphibious animal that has broken the net, has run through the fields of snow, leaving no print. This water washes off the scent. You are clear now of the hunter, the trapper, the wardens of the mind. Yet the warm animal dreams on of another animal swimming under the snow-flecked surface of the pool and wakes and sleeps again. No one sleeps in this room without a dream of a common language. Welcome, everybody. Take a moment to greet those around you. I welcome everyone to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas, on this warm summer morning. And I'd like to share with you some words from a Unitarian Universalist minister who was president the last year I was attending theological school at Starr King School for the Ministry, Gordon McKeeman. And he asks us to think about what does it mean to be all of us in this together, whatever this community means. Ministry is all that we do. Ministry is that quality of being in community that affirms human dignity, beckons forth hidden possibilities, invites us into deeper, more constant, reverent relationships, and carries forward our heritage of hope and liberation. Ministry is what we do together as we celebrate triumphs of our human spirit, miracles of birth and life, wonders of devotion and sacrifice. Ministry is what we do together with one another in terror and torment, in grief, in misery and pain, enabling us in the presence of death to say yes to life. We who minister speak and live the best we know, with full knowledge that it is never quite enough, and yet we are reassured by lostness found, fragments reunited, wounds healed, and joy shared. Ministry is what we all do together.
Words. Words can be heard or unheard, written, whispered, shouted, or sung. They have the power to sting, slander, and to slay, or the power to teach, heal, and inspire. We have the right to words and the responsibility. I light this chalice for all the words of the past and those still unspoken, unwritten, unsung. May they reveal the best of our humanity.
Thank you. Our opening hymn is number 346, Come Sing a Song with Me. Stand as you are able and sing as you are able.
I think so.
Come sing a song with me. Come sing a song with me. Come sing a song with me, that I might know your mind. Then I'll bring you hope when hope is hard to find. And I'll bring a song of love and a rose in the winter time.
Dream a dream.
Come dream a dream with me. Come dream a dream with me. Come dream a dream with me, that I might know your mind. Then I'll bring you hope when hope is hard to find. And I'll bring a song of love and a rose in the winter time. Come walk in rain with me. Come walk in rain with me. Come walk in rain with me, that I might know your mind.
Share a rose.
Come share your hope
later,
when hope is hard to find. And I'll bring a song of love and a rose in the winter time.
Now
come share a rose with me. Come share a rose with me. Come share a rose with me, that I might know your mind. Then I'll bring you hope when hope is hard. And I'll bring a song of love and a rose in the winter time.
Thank you, Michael. I draw your attention to our announcements in the order of service, and I'd like to highlight a few things. Today is our pancake brunch. Please join us after the service for our annual pancake brunch. Please get your tickets after the service. First-time visitors, you are our guests, so please stay and join in the meal with us. And this coming Tuesday, Roy Zimmerman, a comic and a singer and a writer of funny songs, will be here. And please join in this evening of celebration of music. And coming up in the last Wednesday and the next four Wednesdays in October, we will be having an adult education class, Spiritual Ecology, The Cry of the Earth. We'll be looking at essays by Thich Nhat Hanh, Joanna Macy, Wendell Berry, Richard Rohr, and more. So if you're interested, you can buy the books from Ron Parks. Raise your hand. There he is right there. And we need to sign up with Susan Turner, our administrator. There will be 10 in the class. Okay. Ours is a welcoming community where we find connections, a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like, please share a brief personal verbal expression of joy or of sorrow or both.
Hi, everybody. It's been a while since I've been here, but I today decided to come back to this church, which I joined a while ago, and I'm really happy to be back here.
Welcome.
Hi, my name's Leah. I have a concern that my brother Arthur, who is in the nursery right now, got stung by a hornet while we were going here.
Oh.
Michael Oldfather, today Kathleen is representing me and the rest of the congregation at the 60th wedding anniversary for Ron and Ann Knapp, regular visitors here, often standing where Michael is right now. It's a big day for them and their families and for, I think, a lot of UUs around the country.
Two good friends have died this past week, Gene Ernst and Eric Abraham, just yesterday morning. Among other things, they were founding members of our Columbian Artists Group and active in the community and well-loved.
Thank you, Gene. Dick over here. Over here.
Judy and I have a very special joy. Yesterday, with part of our family, we celebrated our 62nd wedding anniversary.
All right. Beautiful. Thank you, William, for helping us. May we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, and those we hold in silence in our hearts. Sandy.
Is it on?
Oh, it's time for kids, young and old alike, if you wish, for our children's conversation. If you could join me. I'm going to sit in a chair because I'm old. My knees are old. I have trouble standing up later. Today, Michael is talking about the power of words. So I thought I would hand out two words to everybody. Would you help, Clara and Maeve? Could you help hand out two words to all the kids? Each kid gets two words. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. You might give one word to the older kids until we're sure there's two words. So the power of words. Words are really important. Have you ever had an adult look at you and say, use your words? Yeah. A lot, yeah. I get it a lot at my house, too, when my kids are kind of looking at me funny. So if anybody has trouble reading the words that they've got, maybe you could get an older person that could help you figure out what the words are that you've got. Say that again. They're easy. Good. Does anybody have a word that they'd like to give back to me? Because it's not a word that you particularly care for. Both of them? Both of them. Okay, I got back. What were the words that you're giving back?
Help and old. Help and old.
Why would you like to give them back? You're giving me these back, too, because you didn't hand them out or because you don't want to. Oh, look at that. Okay, Ronan is giving me back.
It's bobbler, but
Bob alert. I wonder what that means. Bob alert. Ugly. I'm getting back ugly. What else am I getting back? What did you keep?
Pretty.
We kept pretty and we gave back ugly. What are you giving me back?
I'm giving back no and hot.
No and hot. Okay. Why are you giving those back to me? Oh, you'd rather have Bob Alert? That's fine. You want which one? Wish. She's choosing to have wish instead of... You're giving them back now? Anybody else have a word that they really like and they're going to keep? Oh, okay.
Monster.
Monster. Faith and water.
Faith and what? Water. Wow. What is with all these words? Holy cow, what word did you get? Do you know? Shall we sound it out? Oh, Ronan wants it. Now, wait. Oh, try again.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. It's too fast to say. It's just too fast to say. I can always say. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
That's a good word. Is that a real word? No. What about, who has garsnickel?
I do.
Garsnickel. Is that a real word? These are powerful words. Garsnickel, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, ugly, good, hand, help, destiny.
Together.
Together. What? You want to say those words? Keeping them. For the most part, everybody wants to keep their words. Why do you want to keep your words?
I want to keep them because they're cool.
They're cool words. Words are cool. Do you think... can you pronounce those words?
One. Organic.
No.
Organic.
Ornithic. Is that a real word? Ornithic? I was thinking of Michael Oldfather when I made these words up. Ornithic and bobbler. Don't those sound like birds? Oh, okay.
Free.
Free. So, yes, Rose?
Words are fun.
Words are fun. Words are fun, but some words sometimes can hurt people. Sometimes they can... You had hurt, the word hurt? Is that what you said? Did you give it back? Why did you give it back?
Because I don't like to be hurt.
Nobody likes to be hurt. So... This exercise is simply to enjoy the words you've got. Know that there are some words that can be pretty powerful. I thought supercalifragilisticexpialidocious was kind of a powerful word, which means only one thing, and that is?
Happy. Happy.
Happy.
So happy is a good thing. And I thought that it would be good for you guys to think about each of these words that you have and know that every word, good, bad, indifferent, is a really powerful word, and that you guys have power in you to bring supercalifragilisticexpialidocious to everyone else simply by using your words. You think you can do that today? Remember to use your words and express them and be powerful in the way you use them. You promise? Works for me.
In the cycle of our life at the Fellowship, we celebrate Helping Hand Sunday, the second Sunday of every month. And this month's recipient will be the Flint Hills Human Rights Project. And Mike Herman and Kate Lambert will be here to share their passion for this organization.
So I'm Mike Herman, and I'm the current chair of the Flint Hills Human Rights Project. And I first of all want to thank you for the opportunity to be a recipient of the Helping Hands gift.
I'm Kate Lambert. This seems like old times. I'm glad to see you still have the good book here. I was always impressed by how many appropriate songs and readings for any conceivable service are in here. But I'm here today because I'm the only original member of the executive board of the Flint Hills Human Rights Project who's still on the board. And I wanted to mention briefly our formation in the year 2005, 8 years ago now, to fight the anti-gay marriage amendment being added to our state constitution, which it was, but we campaigned against it. That's why we were formed. And Manhattan ended up with a 51% yes vote for that anti-gay marriage amendment and a 49% no vote, the second highest no vote after Lawrence, Kansas. And Riley County had the second highest no vote after Douglas County, which actually rejected the anti-gay marriage amendment. And it was the libertarian argument that almost carried the day here in Manhattan, Kansas, and defeated the amendment. Even if people had never known an openly gay or lesbian person, had never thought about gay marriage, they did not want to see the state decreeing that whole groups of people couldn't enter into agreements with each other. And I believe Michael has some current events of the board to talk about now.
Okay, so first of all, as many of you are aware, FHHRP is a nonprofit organization that serves to be a resource for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender individuals in Manhattan and in the Flint Hills region. And so we're committed to the principle that access to political and social and cultural and economic resources is a fundamental right of everyone. And we work to create sexual, racial, social, cultural, and economic equity through organizing at the grassroots level, public education, advocacy, and just support. So Kate mentioned our history. Some other things in the recent past that you might remember, we spearheaded the addition of protections for LGBT individuals to the Manhattan, Kansas Human Rights Ordinance back in 2011, early in 2011. And then, sadly, you probably also remember that there was an election, and that was rescinded just a couple months after that. But in the wake of that, we were involved in several. We've been involved in many activities, and so some of the things we do involving education, we support a scholarship called the Praxis Scholarship that is awarded to an LGBT student in an area college. And so that's going to be announced as far as the competition for that's going to be announced in the next week or so. We are, in the wake of that political defeat, we are acting to gather information about hiring practices at the city and other governmental organizations, as well as handbooks for high school and middle schoolers to see whether or not there are inclusions for LGBT individuals in those. And our survey so far has been somewhat, maybe not too surprising, but disappointing that not many do. And so we're going to work towards getting those inclusions put in. Other things that we do are we're a resource in the community for LGBT individuals. I'll relate two examples of that. One is we were contacted a few months ago by a young student, Ben, from Wamego. Ben's a senior at Wamego High, and he had been experiencing some bullying in that high school. And he's a pretty determined young man, and he was determined to start a gay-straight alliance in that high school. And he met with myself. Linda went along that day, as well as members of Flint Hills PFLAG, another important organization that supports lesbian, gay students. In any case, we gave him some advice, and we've been in contact with him since then. and not claiming any credit for this on our own part, but we were there to support him. But now we saw him at the Purple Power Play in Points a couple weeks ago. I just saw him. And he reported that not only did he get the Gay-Straight Alliance started at Wamego, that he was given support begrudgingly by the principal there, but they have now nearly 20 members. So I feel like us being there allows people like Ben to find us. I mentioned we were at Purple Power Play in Points. We're also at the Riley County Fair. We have a booth. We put up a big flag. People can find us. And we have information about famous gay and lesbian individuals and transgender individuals throughout history. It serves as a way to educate the public. And as we give out stickers, we give out candy. And just to be there to say, you know, there are lesbian and gay and transgender individuals. We all know somebody, right? So this should not be something that we should be foreign to anybody. But so that's an education thing we do. It's also important because we were at Purple Power Play, and Linda and I were staffing the booth, and a young woman was there. She had been there the day before and gotten stickers. And she went home, and she had the stickers on. Anyway, she came to the booth the next day and was kind of hanging around. And I think I was speaking with one of our current city commission members. We were having a disagreement, but that's okay. But Linda, when her, I guess, motherly instincts noticed that this young woman was just kind of hanging around. And it turned out that she had gotten these stickers from us, went home, and her father had commented on it, and they got into discussion. And she ended up coming out to her father that evening. And I was glad we were there the next day so that we could offer some support to her. And so these are the kinds of things. You know, we're in the community to do these sorts of things. And we use your contributions to help support those activities, to buy materials, to be able to put up booths, to be out there in the community, and to pursue these important protections. So thank you again very much for our support. We're on Facebook. You can like us on Facebook. You can hear about all the stuff that we're doing. Also, I have some membership forms. We have you can join and then learn about what we do. And just thank you again for this opportunity.
The power of words. Was Lawa Zimborska, the winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1996. I quote from her poem called View with a Grain of Sand. We call it a grain of sand, but it calls itself neither grain nor sand. It does just fine without a name. Whether general, particular, permanent, passing, incorrect, or apt. We should not mistake words for reality, or let words replace reality. Words provide a pathway to meaning, but they are not meaning. Power, the ability to do something. Word comes from Old English, I shall say. The ability to do something, I shall say. I grew up hearing two languages in my intimate life. One was Swedish and one was English. Even when my grandparents talked in English, they were speaking in Swedish. Put your pajamas on. Get the yelly out of the icebox. And my grandfather, with his hunting dog, Heffy, would say, now, you yump, Heffy. You yump, no. And we would all look. There's jump and there's yump and there's yelly and there's jelly. There's pajamas and pajamas. Same word. Different tongue, different inflection, different nuances. In my youth, I grew up in the working class neighborhood of Chicago. I heard Polish, Italian, Czechoslovakian. There was Anna in first grade from Hungary. Where in the heck was Hungary? But look at those beautiful little pierced earrings shining. there was the great melodic force of Olga Kubita, the tallest kid in the class, a Russian. Her accent was just amazing. It had such force, and when she spoke, everyone listened. She translated for her parents. It was a great river of expression, Tommy Ryan, with his hint of an Irish brogue, a rich brew of sounds. There are many words for water, earth, fire, sky, but it is water, earth, fire, sky, in every tongue. And from Zimborska's poetic understanding, our use of words to signify the truth about something creates often the illusion of meaning. An illusion of meaning. That there is a particular or static way of telling the truth. But of course, as we know, language is not dead. Language is a living thing. Working with words is a tricky business. A child's first words feel like a miracle. My great nephew Sam is turning 3, is just now speaking his first words. For the first year and a half, when he was able to understand that language was the way people got things from someone like mom or dad or grandpa or great uncle Mike, they had to use words. But he used sign language. And now he's using words quite well. But there was a year and a half there where the parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts were all a little concerned about Sam. Because sometimes he would get so frustrated at not being able to say what he wanted to say that he would just scream. Just scream. Because he couldn't get the words out. Being read as a child. We all remember those moments of just magic and wonder when all of a sudden the world that we knew was not the world that we were in. We could travel. We could go to places. We could be someone that we never imagined before. That power of the imagination, that engine of words that takes us into that realm of the unknown so that we may know something new about ourselves. Literacy and the ability to use words effectively can open many doors. Lack of literacy and fear of speaking one's truth or the inability to speak can oppress the spirit, kill the will. When teased as a child, like most of you, you probably remember that phrase, "Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me." While this response may have had some sense of deflecting the pain that it caused when someone would call you teacher's pet or fatty or whatever it was, you mama's boy, or whatever it is for you that hooked you and made you feel less than. Made you want to hide in shame. Words have that power. While the response, all of us have experienced verbal insults, abuse, and manipulation, and have used words ourselves in ways that are not kind. The power of words impacts our emotions and actions is well documented in science. Scientists have demonstrated that just hearing sentences about elderly people led people involved in research studies to walk more slowly. Just hearing the word elderly slowed the rhythm down, made the tempo a little bit softer. When words of loving kindness are used, experiments reveal how they increase a sense of self-compassion, improve moods, and can reduce anxiety and stress. So when we say to someone, "Oh, it's great to see you. How nice that you're back." Those words have power to reduce stress, to connect us to something bigger than our alienation. Dr. Susan Smalley writes, I once read that a word is like a living organism, capable of growing, changing, spreading, and influencing the world in many ways, directly and indirectly through others. I never thought about a word being alive, but then I thought of words spoken 3,000 years ago, written down and passed through many generations, and they seem quite alive when read or spoken today, having lived 3,000 years ago. As I ponder the power of the word to incite and divide, to calm and to connect, or to create and effect change, I am ever more cautious in what I say and how I listen to the words around me. Language is not dead. It needs the constant influx of life, new tongues, new minds. They stream with energy. And many Native Americans believe they are sacred. Every word you say has the power of creating a holy connection and reminding you of your connection to everything that is. The power of silence. 2 weeks ago, my mother was here for the musicale, and she had a great time. She went home with us, and we had dinner and had a drink, and Mom was feeling very happy and very open and very much wanting to be in connection with Chuck and I. And she said, I do not like living in Lindsberg. I do not like McPherson. I feel empty. I feel empty because I cannot share with the woman I play cards with all the love I have for my gay children. I cannot share that. It makes me empty. Not speaking your truth. You feel annihilated somehow, eviscerated. Stuff is taken out.
Well, good day. It's an interesting thing when you are a partner to someone, in Michael's position, or an artist of some sort, because most of everything you have could be grist for the mill, like comedians, for example. I think that's the worst. And I leave things all over the house. I mean, I've always been I just write down stuff all over the place. And I wrote down something, and it was in a book of artistic pieces by Michael. And so he had every right to be looking at this, but buried in the middle of this is a basically an internal thoughts that I wrote down Sunday, February 22nd, 2004. And more of a diary, General. This is what it says. When the desert vacation ended, I was left with a huge sadness, a cloying, overwhelming ache bigger than I thought my heart was. A minor argument with Michael dropped me through a hole deeper than self-loathing or anger and turned into a darkness, almost, but not quite yet, unfathomable. Unremitting exhaustion, a feeling of constant nausea, sadness unrelieved by the fantasy, the fantastic, or a basketball game, or a spectacle, or a movie, or the cat, or the dog, or even my dear Michael. His concern, trying so hard to touch me, to reach some button and bring me back to a more understandable place. I feel drowned in a million tears. If I start to cry, I may never. But then, unpredictable. Control without purpose equal to it. My face drains and I wear the skin like a mask. Dreaming of driving from work tomorrow on a high overpass, a single lane, and I roll to a stop, unable to see the road, which has turned into white fog. When a cop shows up, all I can say is, all I can see is the sky. And the interesting part about this, outside of my own search for words to express myself at this point, which I never thought anyone would hear or read, but it gives it life again. I mean, it's the life of those words in the writing down of it, or is the life of the words in the telling of it, or is the life in the words discussing it? And we tried to talk about some of this stuff sometimes, but sometimes it seems like when you talk about things, you're immune to the effect of the words. So you've immunized yourself somehow, and you're just really listening for a way out. And it could be any way out. It could be, you said it wrong, or how about this other subject that you're in trouble for, or why did you exaggerate? It's a million possible ways that this can devolve into a discussion of something else and get spread out, and you've defended yourself, listening for a way out. So I guess all I'm saying is that I bury this in something. It sits there for a long time. It had no meaning when I wrote it other than a way to say something. And maybe that felt good. And then, surprise, it becomes an artifact of another time period. And I talk about it here today.
So we have all had these experiences with people we love. When something we've said that we thought was pretty casual, maybe slightly dismissive or slightly cynical or slightly negative, creates this avalanche, this caving in, this sense of hopelessness. And one of the ways that I know to correct that after you've gone through it, because it's important to feel these things. These things are part of what it means to be a human being. So we need to fully experience them, but not to hold on to them. And the only way I know out of that is real and lasting, is for me to say, Chuck, I just read this. You wrote it almost 10 years ago. And I am just shattered by what I've done. I am so sorry. And then a conversation and a moment of healing can begin. A bridge that needs to be built can be built yet again, because this doesn't just happen once. It happens many times in deep relationships. It's part of the texture of our being. But if we don't share those feelings and connect them with words so that someone else that is involved in this knows, you end up burying something really important that dies. I'd like to share some insights from The Power of Words by Leray Quay. And she says, attuned to the quality of our words, and stay tuned, attuned to the quality of our words and their effects on others. Do not be motivated by the need to feel superior and intimidating in how you use words. Never, if it's possible, use words that are cruel or harsh. Invite everyone to improve on their communication process, their ability to speak their truth, their ability to stand up for what is happening to them, whether it is pretty, whether it is ugly, whether it is hot, or whether it's the perfect temperature. Do not place pressure on others into doing what you want. Aha! How many of you are capable of that? I'm not. But it's a good goal. And don't use words to manipulate. Inspire, yes, but not to manipulate. And she quotes, she has went through a number of church bulletins and shares some of the funny, unexpected consequences of not writing with attention. On one church bulletin, it was found, the sermon this morning, Jesus walks on the water. The sermon tonight, searching for Jesus. Two. Ladies, don't forget the rummage sale. It's a chance to get rid of those things not worth keeping around the house. Don't forget your husbands. Don't let worry kill you off. Let the church help. Irving Benson and Jesse Carter were married on October 24th in the church. So ends a friendship that began in their school days. Low self-esteem group. Support group will meet Thursday at 7 p.m. Please use the back door. Weight Watchers will meet at 7 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church. Please use the large double door at the side entrance. So, we probably all have said something like this or wrote something like this in the day of email when we're just a little send, and oh my God, I sent it to everybody. So we need to be careful. We need to be mindful. But as important, we also need to have a lighter attitude about some of this stuff. It's not all heavy. Words are also to levitate, to bring lightness, to bring joy. In reviewing, thinking about what I wanted to try to accomplish this morning, I kept on going back to a phrase in the vision statement that we prepared in the spring after a lot of work and energy. And the phrase, the clause that sticks with me, which I think embodies the whole vision statement, is a bold model of love. To be a bold model of love. We are a voice calling in the wilderness. This fellowship, the things it supports, sometimes barely audible and other times with refreshing vigor to inspire compassion, social action, justice for ourselves. Zimborska, in her 1996 acceptance speech of the Nobel Prize, wrote, "There are those who've consciously chosen their calling and do their job with love and imagination. It may include doctors, teachers, gardeners. I could list 100 more professions. Their work becomes one continuous adventure as long as they manage to keep discovering new challenges in it. Difficulties and setbacks never quell their curiosity. A swarm of new questions emerges from every problem they solve. Whatever inspiration it is, it's born from a continuous, I don't know. Instead of saying you know, it's the place of saying I don't know. In her mind, in her understanding of writing poetry, is working in that place of I don't know. So if you're going to write something that's creative or paint something that's creative, that you already know exactly what it's going to look like, in her understanding, you're wasting your time because you're killing inspiration. You have to be pulled outside of your comfort zone to that place where you will find yourself capable of doing something that you never had imagined. And it touches people with more power than you thought possible because you took the risk to be inspired, to open yourself up, to allow the mystery of our existence to move through you. She says also, what freedom to be able to declare, I don't know, and to be comfortable with not knowing, to see the possibilities, these are my words, and opposites, that two things that are inimical can be held in the same heart as true. So you can believe one thing that says you can't believe this, but really you can believe both. It's a stretch. It takes imagination. It takes a willingness not to always have to be right, to live in a space of wonder. That's where the power is. She goes on to write, many people lack the skills, the moral and personal foundation to live with such curiosity and openness, allowing oneself to discover each grain of sand as something new. They work because they have to. They didn't pick this or that kind of job out of passion. The circumstances of their lives did the choosing for them. Loveless work, boring work, work valued only because others haven't gotten even that much. However, loveless and boring, this is one of the harshest human miseries. To do something you don't love. Day after day. So Szymborska claims poets do not have a monopoly on inspiration by no means, but she places them in a select group of fortune's darlings because they don't make much money. You get $5 for a poem. If you're lucky, more. As many of you know, this summer I worked with the New York Writers Institute with Frank Bidart, a great poet, and then this last week I got an email saying that Helen's poem Adventure would be appearing in the September 9th New Yorker. Now, for anybody who has tried to get poems submitted across this land and continents knows that the New Yorker is one of those pinnacles. Right, so many poets I know who have published everywhere else and have not gotten in the New Yorker, Helen made it. And her poem is called Adventure, and I'd like to read it to you. Adventure. A shampooist in an uptown hair salon warns a matron not to lean too far back on the sink. The salon is being renovated and the sink needs adjustment. The shampooist is new. This time last year, she wasn't a shampooist. She was a chemist in a country now erased by war. This is an adventure, the matron observes, gingerly tilting her head back until it rests on porcelain. Yes, an adventure, the shampooist says, reaching for a towel to cushion her neck. Helen sent an email to everyone in the group and said that she had found the beginnings of this poem in her virtual archives, started in 2006 in Frank Bidart's class that year at Skidmore. So for 7 years, she has worked on these 50 words. 50 words. She has given herself again and again to the task of pairing, of substituting, of finding the right word in the right place with simpleness and clarity and power, and not to be arch or to be, oh, wow, isn't this terrible that this chemist is now a shampooist because her country is no longer in existence? She lets you, the reader, take yourself into that terrain. To give yourself to such a task with so little reward is what we are often called to do in this life. There are no promises that our work on marriage equality will change the law in this state this year or next year, but someday it will. We don't know when that will happen. Helen thanks everyone in the class because she says, without the support of this network, I would not be able to do what I'm doing. So I would like to extend that out to say, we cannot achieve great things in this fellowship without that kind of network of support and challenge and saying, no, this is not quite right. I just don't believe it here. And then saying, oh, that's right, we got it, that's it. Let's go for it. Let the New Yorker have it. Let Kansas change its laws. So she says, thank you, Frank. Thank you, friends. Best regards. When I was 19 and 20, I was involved in a class with the Open Theater from New York City. The Open Theater was the premier experimental theater group of the 60s and early 70s. They did some of the most powerful work of digging into the bedrock, the geology, the getting into the internal reality of theater and letting go of a lot of the conventions. And one of the things they really needed each student to understand if they were going to move forward in this experimental work was to find the place where sound starts in your body. Where sound starts in your body. And believe it or not, they taught us that it starts in your tailbone. That place where we used to have a tail. And for weeks, we would hum, and the teachers would come around feeling, no, you don't have it yet. Bring it down. Bring it down. And finally, there was that day when you could feel the bottom of your spine vibrate with that hum. And they believed if you could find that spot where that vibration started, and there are versions of Tibetan Buddhism that believe the universe started with sound. So this is going back to that notion that everything begins in this place in the tailbone. And that tailbone is what connects us to the breath. And in that breath, we are connected with everyone else because we cannot live without breathing. So it becomes cosmic. But one of the things they asked you to do is when you found that ability to locate sound in your body, so it was coming from your body, not someone else's, but yours, you could begin to work with your authentic voice. And one of the exercises they had you work on a lot is connecting the body to words. And one of the words that I remember having the most power in this exercise was the word time. So I'll just do a moment of this exercise. Time. 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 Time, 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 time. So that whole word resonates through your being and becomes physicalized. I mean, if I were to do it, it would actually involved a lot more, and more people become involved, and they add their words, and out of those words, a story arises magically, a primal story of what it means to be human and connected, and in the act of exploring and creating and using words with originality. So I know I'm all over the map here. With this word thing, I knew this would happen. When you get into the power of words, it just goes everywhere. When I worked with the survivors of torture, one of the things I learned was that the first thing that someone who is experiencing torture learned was to forget their name. So they would go like, what is your name? No, it's Umberto. What is your name? No, it's Umberto. What is your name? Umberto. And then they would start with the electric cattle prods or some other form that would begin to desensitize you to the point where you no longer or just filled you with such pain that you became numb and you could no longer remember your name, because if you said your name, you knew it would be painful. And you would lose that sense of self. You would lose it, and it would be gone. And you would be in this loop, this compulsive loop of torture, not knowing who you are and wanting to disassociate from everybody in your community because now you carried shame for who you once were, even though you don't remember who you were, but you remember the pain. So I would say our job as a community who lives out a bold model of love is to use words wisely, mindfully, speak from the heart in a focused mind with compassion, remembering that we're in this together, and some of the most powerful phrases are, I'm sorry that I did that. Please forgive me. I love you. So what bold models of love? We have a few minutes, not many, but a few minutes to share. Do you have to offer in terms of language and how it works in your life or has worked in your life? Does that mean a little bit over here?
Last week in Joys and Concerns, I mentioned my friend Jim, who had died last week from a tumor, and he fought it for, goodness, 3 years, but it disappeared from his, a lot of radiation and from his enormously positive attitude. And he bought piles and piles of these books about these tests that were done on water that recrystallized when different types of words were said over them. And I wish I could remember the name of the author right now, but if you said things like beauty and joy, it formed different crystals from when you cussed over it or said other words. And then about a year ago, he had tattooed on his chest love and gratitude. And then about 3 months ago, he renamed his cats, Renee and Leona, he renamed them love and gratitude. So,
thank you.
One of the things that I've been just kind of thinking about quite a bit lately that involves words and their effect is how freely people use negative words online, on social media and things. I think it's become way too easy to be a jerk because you don't feel like you have to look someone in the eye when you're being a jerk. And it's a big concern to me. I see friends on Facebook and, I have two friends who are grown adults that had, in one of their words, a tiff. And she unfriended me on Facebook because I didn't comment on her. She thought I was siding with the other person. It just, people take things so personally and so strongly. And it's so easy to say something without feeling the consequence. And I see it, more and more, with younger people that I am in contact with through business and things. And it's a very big concern to me that people are becoming so familiar with not having to be in front of people that communication is really changing for the worse, in my opinion.
Can everybody hear me? Yeah. I read something about bullying the other day, and I wanted to bring that up. Bullying is worse for people than it ever was because of the social media. The article said that in the old days, and I got bullied when I was in school. I saw a lot of bullying. But you could get away from it. You went home. You got away from it. With the social media, it's always there. And so that's what's made bullying worse. I guess the challenge is to figure out how to make things better or to, you know, improve the communication and do away with the bullying.
My name is Tom. That's all. No. And I'm a grateful Unitarian today. Words are hurtful, unfortunately. I don't have a joyful thing to add here, but words are hurtful, and social media amplifies that sometimes. And remember, anything you put on the internet is basically there for almost anybody to see, and it's there forever, even if you delete it. What I've learned in my 50-some years is that words between family members can be very powerful, and if they're hurtful, they can be really hurtful. So I'm combining a bunch of things here. I wish Charlie Kempthorne were here, because when I was in Albuquerque last weekend, in the restroom of my in-laws, I sat down to do my business, so to speak, and there was Charlie's newsletter of, because, you know, he had met my in-laws one time, and you know what the topic was? Poop. And it was all about outhouses, okay? Did anybody read that one? Outhouses.
Outhouses.
What's the name of his thing? MyLifeStory.com? Okay. So I was inspired then to write about my earliest memories of the outhouse. And I guess back when everybody had an outhouse, they were called the toilet. Anybody know that? Nobody called it an outhouse. Anyway, to bring this around, because I get off on different things, I have thought about writing about people, and Charlie's tried to encourage me and just do it. But thing that's nice about writing is I edit a lot, so I choose my words carefully. My Uncle Lou died 2 weeks ago. He lived a good life. I mean, that's a general term. 86 years old. He was my aunt's husband, so he was an uncle by marriage into my line. What was hard, still hard to believe, when I was growing up, they didn't tell me everything when we'd go to Aunt Janie's and Uncle Lou's, you know, for 4th of July and Memorial Day and Labor Day, whatever it was. It was a short 2-hour drive. But I'd hear stories on the car back about how, you know, Lou and his sister haven't talked for 10 years. They haven't talked for 20 years. You know, time. I mean, and there were people married to each other who had not spoken to each other for 20 years. I mean, decades. Okay? They're from an era where you didn't get divorced. They're particularly from a religion, Catholic, Roman Catholic, don't get divorced. Anyway, it starts with words, and so it's better to use good words and think about what you say before you say them.
Yes, thank you. So now let us, I'm sorry, we're kind of, those pancakes, I can smell them. So now let us stand as you're able and sing from the Teal Hymnal, Comfort Me, 1002.
Speed.
share these closing words from Proverbs. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Let's go do some healing.